Hello. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is Charles, and you're listening to the Bringing It All Back Home podcast. It's a podcast about analog photography, often here in South Jersey, as well as sometimes including live chats with people working on something creative. Today's episode is going to be a lens review, taking a look at the Leica 28mm 2.8 Elmerit version 2. Yeah, got this guy on rental. This is a loan or rental I've got out from lensrentals.com. I luckily have this for, I guess, two more days, and I can't wait to talk about it. It's a fascinating lens. It has definitely made me rethink a lot of different things, including just whether or not I would ever be a sucker for 28. So yeah, grab something to drink. I've got some tea waiting to go, and want to get started on this lens review. So by now, you guys know the story. I'm a lensrentals.com fan. They occasionally have promotions where you can get a little bit extra off the rental. I also do the year-long thing where if you pay $99, you get free shipping for the whole year. So it does make sense to rent at least four or five times or more each year, so you can get ahead of those high shipping costs. Typically, every time you use a service like Lens Rentals or borrow lenses, you're going to get hit with, I believe, $25 in shipping fees, because they do ship it in a proper Pelican case and all that good stuff. So yeah, basically spend the $99 if you think it's going to be a good year for renting something, you know, above your income level, and enjoy. And yeah, and this just completely hits all the buttons. You know, this rental is 100% why I renewed my membership last year to do lens rentals. It is a lens that's above my budget. It's a lens that's not even really what I would consider a range or field of view that I would typically shoot with. I associate 28 millimeter with landscape stuff, and I typically associate landscape stuff with my digital camera. Just to say I don't do landscape-ish type stuff. I do, but typically I'm more of a golden hour, let's hit up the mid-century architecture stuff. So you could kind of fall into landscape-ish stuff. It's not people photography, it's not portraits, it's not street. Anyhow, been intrigued for a while about the 28, particularly on the Leica. I've been watching that YouTube channel with Pauly B, you know, where they do the walkie-talkie thing. You know, everybody's got the Rode mic attached, and they just simply do a very, you know, I'm so impressed with Pauly B's YouTube channel. More and more, I think it just absolutely hits such a nice variety of information as well as inspiration, and I'm a huge fan. I definitely love the variety. I love how everybody sort of approaches why they do it, what they're doing, what the gears they're using, as they take on mostly the streets of Manhattan and Brooklyn and what have you, basically the New York scene. Anyhow, a lot of those guys are using 20, and women, a lot of those people are using 28s. Not exclusively, but it's a thing. And I think I've mentioned a couple of times on the podcast, like if you could really nail what is the most sought after combo these days, it is typically an M6 TTL with a 28. That seems to be a go-to combo for quite a lot of folks. Doesn't necessarily have to be the Leica 28. I believe there's a Voigtlander that's highly recommended. They're definitely apples and oranges when it comes to pricing, you know. So, yeah, I was intrigued. I'm like, let me give this guy a shot. I picked what would be a random weekend after the holidays, after the New Year's. did also figure, well, I'll take that one or two days off as well. Aside from my normal weekend day off, I normally have Sundays off. So basically, I figured I'll rent the lens, get it by Friday, return it to UPS sometime Monday, and just hope for the best. Well, so as far as the weather goes and the surroundings, it's not really the best. If you guys are listening to this podcast today on Saturday, you may know that the Northeast is getting hit by a pretty big storm. It's originally supposed to be a storm dumping lots of snow here, at not the case in Jersey or New York City. I think you have to go a bit further north to actually see where this is going to turn into snow. But essentially, it's a very, very dark day out there. You know, the sun is nice and high up in the sky. It's already, 10 o'clock in the morning, and yet the sky's it's just really low light. It's a low light kind of day. This is going to turn into rain later on today, and supposedly tomorrow the storm will be passing through, but it is going to be completely overcast tomorrow as well. So I may have a chance on Monday to see some sun, which would be nice. Doesn't necessarily mean I have to shoot with some sun, but it would be nice. I don't really feel I'm getting to know a lens unless I can take at least a couple pictures with some freaking sunlight, I want to see how it handles contrast, all that good stuff. Maybe, perhaps, today or tomorrow, I may take it out to one of the skate parks and get closer with it and do a kind of street photography skateboarding thing with it before it starts to rain. Anyhow, yesterday had the lens, and I was able to use it during the morning 6-degree golden hour thing. That's the good news. I was able to walk around with this, finish a roll, and find really, really brilliant, clear winter sunlight. It was very wintry out, though. Yesterday morning just happened to be the coldest morning ever this year. So as we proceed along the winter of 23-24, yesterday just also happened to be the coldest morning. It was a little bit intimidating at first. I bundled up a little extra. I did actually go out with gloves on, which I normally don't do for a photo shoot, which I'm extremely happy I did. And I was playing that game of keeping the gloves on, taking the gloves off, putting the gloves right back on over and over, like over 20 times, I guess, roughly speaking, if I had 20 different locations. Okay, so what about the lens? The Leica 28 2.8 a spherical Elmerit. According to the specs, this guy is small. It uses the classic filter size of the 39. Technically, it is lightweight. It's about 6 ounces. It's a beautifully sized M-mount lens. Absolutely just feels perfect. Looks perfect. Feels just absolutely right on an M-mount body. The version I have is black. It is optically designed with 8 elements, 6 groups, and 10 diaphragm blades. And just to cut to the chase, what is so special about this lens? It is referred to pretty much as a fantastic 28 because, in my opinion, the number one thing is that it's incredibly well-controlled when it comes to distortion. And yeah, typically 28s will have that barrel thing going on. This has practically none. So it has this very interesting look. It's wider than 50, wider than 35, 28 millimeter, hardly any distortion. And what you'd expect from a lens with this price range, it is very sharp edge to edge. It also has a pretty good chunk of contrast. I don't think it's necessarily as contrasty as some of the recent Zeiss's that I've rented, like the Zeiss Biogon stuff. I think I rented, 35. I thought that was a bit extra contrasty, but this definitely seems contrastier than some of the lenses I've been using recently, like the old classic version for Summicron for R mount. Anyhow, yeah, what do you get? Lots of contrast, edge-to-edge sharpness, great control for distortion, and shooting wide open, little vignetting. One I would also point out, of course, is what about when you shoot at 2.8, which is, of course, not the widest aperture. It is not going to satisfy people used to shooting at f2. Definitely not going to scratch that itch if you're a 1.4 person. But at 2.8, it kicks ass. It kicks ass. Like, there is no reason at all that you need to stop down to help increase resolution or get rid of vignetting. So yeah, it's pretty darn cool that way, you know, if for whatever reason, maybe just due to the slow film in your camera, or you do want to get that subject separation, just shoot away at 2.8. You're good to go, let alone stopping it down just simply to 3.5 or 4. It behaves as if you're shooting at between f8 and f11 when it comes to resolution and edge-to-edge sharpness. Just kicks ass. All right. I think for me, though, what was so surprising with that shoot I did yesterday was, number one, I was wondering, would I get hung up on not having 28mm frame lines? Using an M4, right? Got the Leica M4, my 1969 M4 chrome. And I basically just Googled it and found everybody was seen to be in agreement. Don't sweat it with the M4 viewfinder. You'll be just fine. Just consider the entire viewfinder to be 28. So when you do adapt this lens onto that M4, it somehow triggers the very, very small frame lines for the 90. Go figure. And they're not too obtrusive on my M4. You know, they're very small. They're in the middle, of course. And you just ignore that. And essentially, just bring it up to your eye and just fire. Like, just don't obsess about the absolute edges of the frames. Now, also, too, I'm not wearing glasses anymore. So I have the camera right up to my eye. And I just kind of went, all right, yeah, this seems to be the right composition. Maybe it's not ironic at all. I felt more comfortable framing this 28 by not having any frame lines than I did when I was playing around with that 40mm weirdness, you know. So when I tried to expand the use of my 40 Summicron C and I was playing around with keeping that on the M4, that seemed to be just stopping my flow a bit more, because I'm like, okay, you know, on the M4, it's bringing up the 35 lines, and yet it's not really 35, it's 40. Anyhow, using the first takeaway that I had was using the 28, holding this guy up to my eye, just kind of reminded me much more of like the old school days back when I had my very, very first camera, you know, my Konica C35 or Konica C35. That just, I would just open up, I would just basically focus and shoot. You know, it didn't have any frame lines. That guy, I think, had close to a 40. It was like a 38mm, I believe. So yeah, for 15 years, my very first camera, I didn't know any better. I just knew to like point, you know, bring it up to my eye and shoot. Just use the whole window, as it were. It worked out just fine. It did not slow me down. It felt really good. Focusing, of course, a breeze using the M4. One of the other interesting details I found out is that this happened to be, if you're into Legends of Leica, Mr. Gary Winograd. This was one of his favorite combos. Not exclusively. Supposedly he was a 21mm guy as well, and occasionally would shoot on 35. But a big, big chunk of what he did was, I believe, just using this exact same version of the lens, I guess version 1. But yeah, he was an Elmerit 28 guy, and he would most likely zone focus and not even bother with a viewfinder. There are videos of him out there holding an M4 with another lens. I believe that's where he's using the 21 with the actual, shoe-mounted viewer, you know, the viewfinder thing for the 21. Anyway, regardless of Gary Winograd's whole deal, I love this combo. Absolutely love this combo. So the big test was, okay, I'm going to put a roll of film in there. I'm going to do my little 6 degrees of sun, you know, my golden hour jaunt, looking for my mid-20th century buildings around here. Every day I'm very, very grateful that literally toward my right and dead center and toward my left, when I look out of my building here, I have 3 mid-century motels all within walking distance. And then what I do to fill that out is I also, down the road, a interesting 70s building with this sort of like, not like breeze blocks, but almost like as if they had used the exterior with breeze blocks and then decided to fill them in. Anyway, just a really unusual design. Maybe it's late 60s. I'm guessing it's early 70s. And if I keep going, there is a local auto repair shop. And lately there's been there's usually at least one, vintage car hanging out at the lot. So I'll kind of like get most of the roll done with the motels, the vintage car, and the early 70s, design, and then just find something else to finish it up with. For me, that would be going back to the landmark here in Margate City, which is Lucy the Elephant. So yeah, did the whole thing. By the time I got to the end, my fingers were numb. My right hand was numb from just holding the metal M4, you know, the brass M4 in my hands, because the real feel that morning yesterday was supposedly around 16 degrees, not what I would call the most relaxing way to shoot. But I'm so happy I had that opportunity, because after I developed the film and I finally got them back in, I'm just so impressed. So what are the takeaways of seeing these first test shots? Number one, it is not a SumerCon look. It's not all about the micro contrast and the vintagey thing. It is definitely leaning more toward what I would call like the Zeiss T or the slightly contrastier look. But on my absolute favorite shot out of the roll, which was where the sun actually wasn't directly in the lighting up my subject, shooting in the shade at the car repair lot, and this car called an American 220 is just getting a little bit of reflected light along the back left side of its bumper. So there's a brightness of the highlight there. The lens has perfectly captured the sharpness of the logo and the rear tail lights, as well as the bumper. In the distance, falling out of focus, are some highlights reflecting from the shop window. Everything that is good about Leica optics comes into play here in black and white. So the highlight has this glow to it, and yet it's perfectly falling in with the surrounded by degrees of sharpness, edge-to-edge sharpness, that is just gorgeous. So that was the first shot where I was like, oh. And then I did, obviously go through a couple more and began to feel an appreciation for the focal length, So I feel like I kind of get it now where I have had times on this podcast where I'm like, I don't understand 35 millimeter. I want to love 35 millimeter. My lens for my M4 is a 35 millimeter Voigtlander, but it always seems to sometimes make it less than perfect for me. And as I mentioned on one of the earlier shows, I started shooting exclusively 35 to just kind of break through. And I think it helped a lot. I also have another really nice vintage lens for my Nikkor Met. I've got an AIS-35K, I believe, that I often use with a little bit of a yellow filter. And that guy has produced some wonderful results. And composition-wise, I feel like forcing myself to use nothing but 35s for at least 6 weeks, a 35mm lens, I mean, really helped. On the other hand, with this 28, I felt like I just surrendered to the viewfinder. I'm like, just shoot. Like, just take a shot. You know, don't worry about the framing so much. Just take a shot. And yeah, there's just a real nice look to 30 to the 28 length, you know? So I'm impressed with the focal length. I'm impressed with the Leicaness of the Elmarit. I'm impressed 100% with how it feels. Any criticisms? I do have one. I don't feel like the build quality quite matches the price. I feel like when I'm moving the ring for the f-stops for the aperture, it is just not really clicky. It just kind of, I'd say it's mushy, but it doesn't feel like it has, I don't know if this is the wrong word or just like hearing it, the tolerances, it just doesn't feel as precision engineered when I move through the aperture ring. That's about it. That's the only complaint I would have. I love the little hood for it. The hood's fantastic. And again, this is the version 2. So how much would this thing cost if you went, if you left the fantasy world that is lens rentals and you started to commit to this lens? If you wanted to treat yourself and get it brand new, you could head over to B&H right now, where it has nothing but 5-star reviews. And again, this is the Leica Elmarit -M 28mm f2.8 spherical lens. And this happens to be, of course, the version 2. It is selling for $2,452. And 33 cents. So yeah, it is a $2,500 lens. Actually, with the tax, it's going to be even more. Yeah, $2,500. $2,452, not including tax. Head on over to eBay, and it does really vary there. So there's quite a few folks selling the version 1, which according to Lens Rentals, there's the biggest difference between the original and the update is it's supposedly a little bit lighter, a little bit smaller, and I think the other thing has to do with that lens hood. But anyway, getting back to eBay, if you're looking for version 1, if you're okay with version 1, I am seeing version 1 as low as $1,400. Here's one for, $1,500. But typically the version 2, which they're listing here as 6-bit as one way to emphasize that it's version 2. Yeah, they're typically $1,700, $1,800, $1,900. Here's one that's even $2,100. So that must have been absolutely straight out of the box. I think, oh yeah, this guy was including a UV filter, which, yeah, I'm sure a nice UV filter would cost at least $100 for it. But yeah, anywhere, it's kind of a wide range if you get it used. But yeah, the original in box, you're looking at very much close to it brand new. You're still saving $400 or $500 because you're not paying that brand new price. But yeah, here we go. Here's one that was sold December 22nd, the new version with the original box, near mint. It went for $1,949. And I guess, was this a buy it now or let's just curious if this was an actual, no, let's look. It was probably a buy it now, because I don't see anything here about, wait, the seller has relisted the item. Oh, so interesting. Okay, hold on. Yeah, it is a buy it now. So yeah, the buy it now on, I guess he's relisted it. So maybe something went off. Something went wrong with the original sale. It is listed for $1,890. So there you go. $1,900. a big thing that I guess to really respond once the dust settles, once you send back these lenses that are aspirational, these lenses that are hitting way above your budget, what do you do with that information? I think what's happened to me a little bit is that once you get comfortable with shooting with, say, a top-of-the-line 28mm M mount, a top-of-the-line 35mm M mount, a top-of-the-line 50mm M mount, it does become harder to get excited about those lens sizes when you're using something that's just barely mediocre. So to make this point a little bit better, prior to getting the lens rental, I had a little bit of fun on eBay throwing a bid out there or two on a completely different system. This was the Minolta Maxim 9, or otherwise known as the A9 or the Dynax 9. I think it's got the typical Minolta back in the day. They had three different names for three different markets, Japan, Europe, and the USA. And this camera has been raved about by the Camera Revival folks, by that guy Alex, you know, and I trust them very much. And typically, you would pay at least $200, if not three, or somewhere in between two and three. The person selling the camera did not do a great job on the description, so I think he or she just missed the majority of people who would have been hunting down that camera, because at no point in the description had they actually listed it as being a Minolta Maxim 9. They instead just said Minolta lot includes lens, and he was hung up on the remote control, and then in the description, like, includes a remote control and a low bag, and the camera is in fairly good shape, though it's been well traveled. One user, did I tell you it includes a lens? Like, at no point did he mention it's an Maxim 9. So I just figured I'd throw a bid out there, then throw another one. Next thing you know, I won the camera at a ridiculous price, like a third of what it would normally go for. It came the same day as my lens rentals. So I figure, I know what I'll do. I'll use the Maxim as my metering instead of taking out my phone or taking out, you know, my one of my Gossen, meters. I'll use the metering on this high-end autofocus camera, which I might do a podcast on, maybe not, I don't know, that has some superb features, including really, really fast shutter speeds and terrific metering. You know, the top-of-the-line Minolta metering back in the day, competing with Nikon. Well, the metering came out fantastic. The photos I shot on that roll were great. But I'll be really honest, like, once I developed and scanned the stuff from the Leica, I wasn't even motivated enough to scan what I had shot on the Minolta. And it was only this morning before the podcast that I finally did scan those photos. And I think, yeah, the best thing I can say about them is really, really well exposed. You know, they're really well. I'm like, the exposure's great. You know, so what am I getting at? It's a little bit problematic when what you're renting is purely the lens, you know, taking advantage of the lens from lens rentals. And really, to cut to the chase, what can happen is this stuff, these lenses that go for over $2,000 or more, could possibly lend itself in a negative way to your shooting, because if all it does is just make you realize how boring a simple mediocre lens is, then it may challenge you a bit. Luckily, I think I'm not going to fall into that trap. So, at least when it comes to 50mm and 35, I have some wonderful 50mm and 35 lenses for other systems, like pretty much mostly for Nikon. Like my classic Nikkor P, the 52, and my, as I mentioned, that 35mm AIK. They're awesome freaking lenses. They're great lenses, and they're really, really in my budget. You know, those are lenses that are not hundreds of dollars. They're very, very, very affordable, especially the because both are not really I think the AI, it's not AIS. It's one's pre-AI and one's just an AIK series. So where am I going? Basically, the idea is, keep aspiring to these more expensive lenses, but beware. Because if, let's say right now, I was in love with a 28 millimeter for that that field of view, for that that lens size, on a different system or a different lens, sorry, on a different camera, and then now I suddenly rent the Elmerit, and maybe a month or two from now I rent the 28 millimeter Summicron, it may be really hard to go back to the normal priced lens, you know. That's my only downside, I think. But anyway, will I be looking to bid on this thing? No, there's just no way. At least not, you know. I mean, I'm not in a position where I could justify a $2,000 lens. Who knows? You know, maybe good fortune and good luck may hit all of us out here listening in this podcast land. But it also begs the question. I guess, you know, life is short, right? It's just weird. It is, you know, it's all relative. Like, for instance, not to compare it to laptops, but, you know, it's not impossible when you purchase a laptop with what you really need. Like, say you're a YouTuber and you really need at least 1 terabyte of solid state, and you're going to be using After Effects, or you're going to be using a Premiere, or you're going to be using Blackmagic stuff. You know, you're going to be working with 8K footage, and you basically say, no, I don't want, I actually need at least 16 gigs of RAM. Next thing you know, yeah, you're looking at some laptop that's going to be at least $2,000 or more. What's my point? Well, 5 years from now, maybe even just 4, that laptop is not going to be worth $2,000 anymore. That's going to be cut in half if you're lucky. If you're lucky, you'll be able to resell that 5 years from now for $1,000. So in the relative state of things, you know, if you did decide to shell out $2,000 for a near mint Elmerit 28, the theory is that 5 years from now, you should be able to sell it for at least $1,700 or $1,800. Who knows? Maybe even more. So that's that one area where you could start tricking yourself into justifying why you spent $2,000 on a short little lens, you know, that just does one thing. It just shoots 28. It's nice to dream. I do have it in my B&H wish list, you know, the when I win the lottery list. But yeah, lovely lens. I 100% recommend this guy. Just to wrap up, I decided just for relieving, I decided to take another look at Ilford Delta 100 for different reasons, more about going back to the long exposure stuff I was doing. It has been a really long time since I had bought more than a couple rolls of Delta 100. So I bought like 4 rolls of 120 and I think about 4 rolls of 35 millimeter. One thing I can say, which I just unequivocally, is it is no T-Max 100. You know, like it has some wonderful properties. It can, in this case, I thought it definitely brought out the Leica glow thing very, very well. I thought it handled the lighting and the contrast. I have no complaints about any of these shots, but it really struck home for me, bringing it all back home, that I really know T-Max 100 quite well, because that had been my go-to film for both buying it in its original box and cartridge, for buying bulk roll. And the T-Max thing is still a pain in the butt when your room's too dry, because then you have to do the reverse curling procedure before you can scan it, and then that introduces all kinds of dust. So it's really a double pain in the butt at the end of getting a roll done with T-Max 100 in the winter. So you have to wait another hour before the curl reverses, and then you're spending way more time getting rid of the dust because it's just picking up dust because it was not just simply cut up and put into your scanner or used in your DSLR or mirrorless setup with your copy stand. All the same, T-Max 100 is the bomb when you're looking to explore resolution and edge-to-edge sharpness. And that's one thing that I thought Delta 100 would still give me. No, it's not there, you know. So yeah, it's just interesting because people often just say, well, you know, HP5 is Ilford's is Tri-X, and Delta 400 is Ilford's T-Max 400, and likewise, Delta 100 is T-Max 100. No, it's not. It's not even close. It's not even close. So it makes me think, like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be buying big chunks of Delta 100 anymore. I think I'm just going to stick with what really is the most reliable films and the films I love the most, which really at this point is down to FP4 in both medium and 35mm formats. And then when it warms up, or if we get into a rainy season again, heading back to T-Max 100, which is still the bomb when it comes to resolution. Anyhow, guys, happy to have come back today with a little lens review. And yeah, thumbs up for the 28mm M-mount, the Emlorit, the 2.8. Wonderful, wonderful lens. If you do have it, I am envious because it just feels perfect on an M-mount camera. M-mount camera plus 28 equals lots of goodness.